Well, I'm a big Halloween fan, and an even bigger Day of the Dead fan. I get paganism. I get the ideas of paganism, the really not even as a faith system, but as a mythology system and as an experiential system, that we have a sense of being connected to something greater, to the earth, to the sky, to life, to a greater sense of life. Halloween, Day of the Dead, are celebrations. They're celebrations that we make kind of scary and spooky because it's fun, but I think that there's a deeper purpose behind it and a deeper insight. The pagan idea around Halloween and the Day of the Dead is that life and death are not complete opposites of each other, and that there is a membrane, a thin membrane, a porous membrane, that being the nature of membranes, between life and death. We in the West tend to make absolutes. You're either living or you're dead. There are a lot of people in between, and we have a lot of instincts of what is in between and what the sense of that membrane is. For most of us, and it is not only pagan but increasingly scientific, the great questions of what is it to be alive, what is it to be dead, and that great and gray area in between. We tend to define things with fine lines between life and death, but it's usually a big, fat, blurry line, and a line that we're not really sure about. We look at in the pagan world at things like Halloween and Day of the Dead, and the ghosts and the goblins and all of our ritual around that. But the thing that has always struck me is I'm not afraid of any of my ghosts. I love my ghosts. And my ghosts, I think, loved me in life, and I believe they continue to love me, whether they're originating out there or in here. My ghosts are not to be feared. My ghosts still speak to me, still inspire me. The people I have loved who have touched my heart and touched my life, they are not gone. They are not inaccessible to me. The great theological question of whether I'm inaccessible to them, you're not going to get an answer to in this sermon or in most Unitarian Universalist congregations. But that they are accessible to us seems to me to be self-evident from how we live and how we mourn and how we move the people who have touched us into our hearts and do not accept them as fully far away from us and inaccessible to our hearts. They visit us in dreams, in our mourning rituals, and in the fact of how we mourn, we can see them moving in and out of our lives. When I come down the hill in my home, my mother used to live in Westwood, and I used to turn right onto Sepulveda and visit her 3-4 times a week. She has been, we use the term gone now, for about 8 years. I come down there and I always still look right because she's not completely gone. And she still visits. I hear her voice whispering sometimes in my dreams. I hear her voice sometimes not whispering in my dreams, but telling me, you know, you could lose some weight, darling. She can be critical, you know, for the great ones, the criticism doesn't stop even after death, you know. It's kind of like Democrats in Chicago. They still get a vote. You're wearing that tie? Are you crazy? But they're there for us. And so that pagan and almost universal sense of the nearness of those who have been in our lives, that we don't banish, they don't disappear and go away in their final breath from us. They may recede, they may visit less often. When the phone rings, I no longer expect it to be my mother or my father or my aunt. But when they, soon after they had died, when the phone would ring, I would go, oh, and then I would stop myself. Or we go to pick up the phone, something would happen, and I'd say, well, I should call, and I'd stop myself. There is a quiet receding of their spirits from us, but they don't go away. And I think that's part of the wisdom of paganism and of the pagan ideas within both Halloween and the Day of the Dead. But it's not simply pagan. It's universal. As a clergy person, I have attended many deaths. I'm not talking about people who are ill, but at the actual moment of, I'll just call, transition, much more peaceful than it is usually in the movies. And that gentle moment when somebody is there and then not there, I completely get, and I'm using get as opposed to understand because understanding is more intellectual and complex, but I get the instinct that we are more than meat. That what animates us, the anima, the animating principle, what religious call the soul that inhabits us and that most religions say goes away in that final breath, I understand that as metaphor, and I get the great mystery. And you cannot attend such a time without asking the question, what happens to that anima? What happens to that spirit? What happens to that soul? Where does it go in the final breath? And to have an instinct that it must go somewhere, I understand that instinct, because in those moments you just look around and say, well, that body, that was Mom, but she went somewhere else. I'm not making a theological statement, I'm making a psychological statement. In terms of how our various societies experience this, how we experience it ourselves, I had one very near-death experience that was so near-death that I thought that I was dead. I had a medical emergency up in San Francisco about 30 years ago. And as my nails were turning cyanotic and I was not getting oxygen, and they put me in a car and took me to an ER and threw me on a gurney and stuck a needle in my arm, and I stopped moving and I stopped breathing, and my mind went, whoa, anaphylaxis, you're dead. And I looked down at my body. I was hovering up on the ceiling where you're supposed to, and I remember thinking, yeah, you could lose some weight, and then I thought, and you will. But the dog that didn't bark was the astonishing thing. I was filled with curiosity and wonder, and the dog that didn't bark was fear. I was not scared. I did not feel guilty. I was not trembling before the prospects of the gates of hell for all of my sins. I was just curious. I was wondering, how long does consciousness last, and what's next? It was a sense of just real emotional and intellectual curiosity. Then I felt the tube go in, and I felt them respirating me manually on a bag, and I started to come back. and I came back to this world of fear and of anxiety, and I didn't come back either eagerly or reluctantly, only kind of, gee, I wonder what would have happened next. And I still wonder, but I'm not that eager to find out. I mean, it was nice that I wasn't scared, but I'm still not that eager to find out. But that fuzzy place, that fuzzy line that's neither living, neither fully alive, nor fully dead, is something that, again, is universal. I think, of course, of Miracle Max in The Princess Bride. I'm sure you're all familiar with Miracle Max. He's dead, but I've seen worse. He's dead, but not completely dead. If you're not completely dead, you're still partially alive. But what do you do if you're completely dead? Well, there's only one thing to do if they're completely dead. What's that? Well, you go through their pockets for loose change. But our religious traditions and our mythic traditions have that never-never land in them. In the Jewish tradition, there are ovaths, which are ghosts and spirits that can haunt or bless. There are dibbuks in Eastern European Judaism that can usually haunt, seldom bless. There are exorcisms. Exorcisms where there are Kabbalistic incantations to get rid of an evil spirit, and if that doesn't work, they pull out the big gun, which is the shofar, and they just scare the hell out of the devil, and it's supposed to leave the body. There are these, and you know there's demonic possession in a lot of Christian folklore and exorcisms, but there's also within the gospel narrative, this central to the Easter story is the resurrection, which is not complete. When a disciple goes up to touch Jesus after Easter Sunday, he says, "Don't touch me, I'm not fully ascended." There is a world in between the grave and the final resting place in which Jesus visits people, eats with people. Proving his Jewish origin. Even after death, there is still food. You didn't finish your fish, Jesus. You know how long I worked on that fish? This is kind of a universal thing. It is in the ghost of Hamlet's father, who is hovering around waiting for justice, which usually means vengeance, before he can be at peace. Banquo's ghost showing up to Macbeth. In all of the tales of Homer and the Iliad, the Odyssey, you have these shades hovering around the earth for a while until they are able to find peace. Of course, in a psychological sense, most of us understand this as until we can find peace. So that the people who are important to us who have gone away, it isn't that they're wandering around waiting to find peace. It's that we take some time to find a comfortable chamber in our hearts there to keep them warm and alive. For most of us, our ghosts are inspiring and enriching and not something to be bought off, given candy to stay away, which really seems to me kind of a strange, negative twist of an incentive. Here's some candy. I mean, normally you'd be back for more. I'm not sure that works, but I like the Day of the Dead much better than our Halloween because it doesn't say, we want to buy you off, go away, don't bother me or scare me. It prepares a meal. It goes to the cemetery. It builds an ofrenda where we remember, we don't get over, we get through, we don't get closure, we look for peace. And the idea of welcoming our spirits, welcoming our ghosts, nourishing them as a sign of how much they nourished us, I think is healthy. Now, I'm sure that everybody has a ghost or goblin that they don't particularly want to invite in. But, you know, my junior high school algebra teacher just doesn't show up in my dreams that often. The things, the ones, the people, the spirits that show up in my dreams are for the most part wonderful and loving. I think it's healthy to see our visitation with our spirits not as visits in jail where there is wire and bars and thick glass, but I like that image of a permeable membrane. A place in between. A place in between where we can talk, where we can listen, where we can sing, where we can welcome, where we don't have to worry about the tricks, but we celebrate the gifts that the people who loved us, who created us, have given us. We take those pagan insights, those really universal insights of our ability to reach out and communicate and be nourished by each other even beyond this life, and hold them near and hold them dear into our hearts. We see our ghosts as shimmering visions out of the corners of our eyes, not fully fledged, not fully fleshed, but just there at the edge of consciousness. Close our eyes and drive them off, or keep them. One day we had gone out of town and taken my mother-in-law with us, and we got up to go to breakfast, and we said, "Mom, you want to get up and come to breakfast?" And she said, "No, I'm talking to Daddy right now," her husband, who had died some years before. "Let me go back to sleep. We're having a very nice time." Yes. Yes. Open ourselves to that. Offer the breakfast, offer the lunch, offer the candy, not for them to go away, but to stay inside and to whisper into our hearts and let those whispers inform us and warm us and make us appreciate every day that we have together here and all whom we love in this life and will continue to love beyond their lives.